What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Meaning Enough Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about your favorite filmmakers and franchises and the deeper meaning within them. And now we are here finally talking about part two of the Fast and Furious franchise. We're going to be talking about Fast 5, 6, 7, and 8. And joining us today, we have him, guys. Adam Halavik from Heroes Reforged is here to talk about Fast and Furious. We knew only one man for the job was here. And if anyone is going to talk about this ridiculous franchise, it is Adam himself. Adam, how are you feeling, especially talking about Fast and Furious?
Very excited to be here. I love this franchise. Every time someone poo-poos on it on Twitter, I get very upset.
Yes.
It's one of my favorites. No, but I've been a fan of this franchise ever since the first one. I knew nothing about this movie going into it when I saw it in 2001. In theaters, because I'm an ancient piece of sand.
I did too. I scared these two guys. I told them that last week, and they were like freaked out because they were much younger.
I didn't know anything about it. Like, I knew very little about cars, street racing, any of that stuff. So I was like, man, this looks like a fun action movie. And I've been going ever since, and it's been an amazing ride to see this franchise really shift and embrace a bigger audience. But I know we're going to get into that, so I'm excited to talk about that.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for being here, obviously. And I know Sabrina and RB3 are here as well. Sabrina, you are doing this for the first time, watching these movies for the first time. So this is an exciting moment for sure, having you on here. And obviously, RB3 is here because he's a fan of these movies, especially these last four, I believe is what he said last week, is that he's a big fan of these last few movies. Let's start off with that, Adam, especially because I have you here, and especially because this is always a conversation. It's why we divided it like this between part one and part two, part one being Fast 1 through 4 and part two being Fast 5 through 8. It's because of this ginormous shift that happened in the Fast and the Furious franchise, even though it was still Justin Lin that was directing the movie, and he did the previous one, which was Fast and Furious 4. Fast and Furious is what it's called. We noticed this kind of significant shift when it comes to tone, when it comes to scale, and when it comes to kind of overall success in the franchise between Fast and the Furious and Fast 5. What do you attribute that to, and how do you feel about where they were and kind of what decided to change it so much?
I think they found out that the Avengers was coming out, and they're like, I want to beat those sons of bitches to it. I mean, that's
literally
really, to me, that's like, that's what the franchise did that I think made a huge difference. It's no secret that the first two movies, even though there is like some diversity in the cast, it's primarily led by two men who look very white. And it's not that that's not appealing. I think like the concept of cars was very appealing to people. And the fact that it was like a Point Break type of film was very appealing to people. But I think with Fast 5, because it brought back every character that had been in every movie up to that point, it was able to bring in the fans of all three of those movies. And I think that was, or all four of those movies. And I think that was a huge opportunity for them to like really capitalize on every market possible. And even though the concept and the theme of family was kind of played up in the first one, in two and three, you don't really have that much of it. Four, it really starts to kind of like pick back up. But then in five, like they really hit it home, and they're really emphasizing like it's about family, it's about protecting each other and all that sort of stuff. So I think that was the opportunity that they saw, was we can really capitalize if we lean into the theme of family, and we don't have to really worry about the street racing stuff. Like the street racing stuff, people will be there and they'll show up for that no matter what. But it's really, if we can really turn this into, lean into a little bit of the action, which I think up to that point, they did a pretty good job in all the movies. I have some beef with Fast and Furious in the tunnel. That's a little wonky. But other than that, I think, you know, they really understood that if they were able to bring in all these people, they'd bring all these fans together. And I mean, Fast 5 was like, it was a big deal when that movie came out. I mean, it did so incredibly well. And watching in the theater opening weekend, the audience reaction to that was, it made the whole thing clear, like, this is the path that we need to follow going forward, including all these characters. And I think it just makes it a much more fun ensemble piece.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right, Sabrina, because I'm curious to get your reaction, because you're actually seeing this firsthand and for the first time. Did you notice the shift? Between the first few movies and now with Fast Five and obviously leading into Fast Six, did you notice that kind of tonal shift if what they were going for?
Oh, 100%. I feel like that shift is really felt not only just by everything that Adam kind of talked about, but like introducing people like The Rock, having kind of that like blockbuster cinematography, the way everything looked, it looks standard to that, because we saw like the aesthetic of each film kind of change as the story and the setting changed. But this shift was felt because we go from like street racing and mild crime. We talked about how they were barely like, yeah, they were committing crimes, but they weren't terrible people. And now it's like heists, espionage, like torpedoes. I mean, it's seriously like a superhero franchise. So it's impossible to not feel that shift. But I really enjoyed it. I am not gonna lie, because something that I talked about in our last episode was how I didn't like Tokyo Drift at the time because it kind of took away everything that I really enjoyed about the franchise. I just didn't see it really present in that film. I loved Han, but in this one, getting every single character that we have come to love all together again, really honing in that idea of family, I feel the warmth. I'm so attached to every single one of them, even though they're doing like the craziest stuff. It is so dangerous. I'm like, nah, they're good people. It's fine. Look, they're warm, they're family. And yeah, so it's definitely felt going into the fifth film.
Yeah, RB3, it's interesting because I rewatched Fast Five recently and I noticed how it has a combination of different genres in it. It's obviously having this action franchise, but it's also a heist film. And obviously, I just saw Army of the Dead with you guys and we talked about it. But it's a heist film in its heart because they set up what they're trying to rob, and then they have that moment, RB3, where they say, "We need a team." And then they bring back old characters. Is that kind of what did it for this film for you? As far as kind of combining everything that we liked about the first and kind of just raising it up a different level?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people who know me in my real life, and I think a lot of the internet knows, I'm a Fast Five super fan. I've talked about multiple times
How
how
do I not know this, and why haven't we had a barbecue?
I know, for real. I've talked about how the first Blu-ray I ever bought was High School Musical 3. The second Blu-ray I ever bought was Fast Five. And I remember that so vividly because I remember seeing Fast Five like 3 times in theaters with a gang of my middle school friends, and we saw it so many times. And
You're a
it
baby.
was, yeah, no, it was great. Yeah, so literally at the end of my 8th grade year, it was like perfect timing. Came out in April. Blockbusters were not coming out in April back in 2011. People forget that. Every time if a movie was coming out in April, people thought it was like a dead zone. But I remember this was the first time I saw a movie in April, and people were like packed around the corner to see it. I saw it like at the late night showing. This is literally one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite movie experiences of all time. From right from the jump, like, you're talking about the heist concept in general. The first heist is really breaking Brian out from the prison sequence, right? Because they set that up at the end of the fourth movie,
Or
and they can,
Dom.
or Dom, I'm sorry, yeah, Dom. But it's Brian leading that pack with everybody there. So we saw that happen at the end of the fourth movie, and then it continues. That's like literally the first thing right out of the gate of the fifth. And just lets you know like what kind of time it is. It's not going to be just race cars anymore. It's going to be like some actual Aztec, whatever, whatever.
Dude, when they flipped that truck, was I the only one thinking, especially rewatching? I was like, did y'all kill everyone in that? Everyone's dead. There's no way you're surviving
Not only
that.
that, when the van hits Brian's car, it doesn't cause any damage to that car, and you're like,
It's
okay,
indestructible,
muscle
guys.
car.
Yeah,
Muscle car.
exactly.
I love how it cuts to the newscast, and it's like they broke Tom Toretto. I was like, are you sure they didn't kill Dom Toretto?
The moment that happened,
And
I was like, this is gonna
everyone.
be a very different movie.
Yeah, but go ahead, Arvith.
And then at least just jumps from that opening sequence to what I said last time, what my favorite car in the Fast and Furious franchise is, when they're getting that Chevy, breaking that out of the train. Like, for one, it's a train heist. Like, you go from a bus heist to a train heist, isn't that just nuts? And they're breaking out an entire car. Yeah, it's absolute perfection. They jump out of the car into the water, kind of signifying, hey, yo, the car stuff is over. It's all about the action. It's all about the intensity. It's all about these dudes surviving dangerous stunts. And the stunts is also something that was crazy to me, too, because you could see that a lot of this film was, like, inspired directly from, like, Hong Kong cinema in particular. Particularly the action sequences. Like, I think a lot about that scene when they're in Rio de Janeiro and they're, like, running across the rooftops of, like, all of the... across all the different houses, having that chase sequence. And that's something that would come right out of, like, Inferno Affairs or something, like, right out of, like, a Hong Kong street action movie, but except it's elevated to, like, a much grittier and higher standard where it's, like, literally taking place in, like, this iconic locale. And by the way, I mentioned this in the notes, but this came out in April 2011, April 15th. I think the weekend before, the weekend after, that animated film Rio came out. So there we had two Rio-related set movies come out the same month. I want people to acknowledge that. That's really cool. But I love this movie. Brazil. Yes, this is Brazil. So yeah, I mean, this is the magnum opus of the franchise. I think everybody kind of caught on to this. Even that last song at the end. I don't know the lyrics. I really can't get the lyrics. But that was. They still playing that at parties to this day.
So, you guys ever go back and rewatch the teaser trailers for these movies? Because Fast Five has probably like the best teaser trailer. The music is so good.
See, my thing is, I just rewatched this movie, and I had to do this as like the main one that I watched, like the whole thing, because Fast Five is definitely probably the best out of these four, in my opinion. And I kind of want to bring it here because I feel like when we start this movie, you're right. We start with the heist of like breaking him out of prison, you know, flipping that giant truck out and then stealing the cars from the train. But everything still felt, you know, very much elevated. But the characters felt the same. You know, Brian felt the same. Mia felt the same. Dom felt the same. And even Vince calling him a buster. You're still a buster. But it's one of those things where it still felt like you had this familiar, you know, link to every character on screen. What changed and what dramatically changed, and I think this is where the tonal shift changed, not only in the action set pieces, but in the characters being kind of ridiculous and over the top, was one Mr. Dwayne The Rock Johnson coming out shiny like a fresh bowling ball with his bald head and sweating constantly. He is ridiculous in this movie, and purposefully so, because he's hysterical. And I remember watching this in theaters too, RB3, and I remember everyone losing their minds, laughing at everything he said, finding it funny, even though it wasn't like a funny line. He would just say like, yo, grab the goons, and he would just say it in a way that you were just like, bro, this is insane. What movie are you in? This is not the same movie, at least I don't think so. But then it turns into that movie. How'd you feel about the introduction of The Rock into this franchise, and what did that mean, Adam? Because a lot of people credit him for kind of reinvigorating it.
Yeah, I mean, I was super excited. I mean, the tagline for this movie is, this model is fully loaded. That's about as ridiculous as you can get. And I remember seeing, this was before I followed like trade news, so I don't think I read that The Rock was going to be in the movie. I think it was the teaser trailer that I saw him. But I was super excited because, you know, at that point I knew of The Rock because, you know, he'd been in talks to do Black Adam for like years. So to have him in this movie and to kind of have a character who is like Brian O'Connor in terms of he comes from the right side of the law, but he is like fully committed to the right side of the law and going after these guys, I thought was going to be a very interesting dynamic. And I think most of the villains that we had previously, they were all kind of related to like weapons and drug cartel, and it kind of carries over from the previous movie. But The Rock really is like the villain of this story, for lack of a better term. And it's so fun because, you know, at some point in this movie you're going to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Vin Diesel kick the shit out of each other, and that's the moment that you're waiting for. And when it happens, it feels so earned because they've constantly been chasing each other on rooftops and shooting guns at each other and crashing into each other. So finally, when that hand-to-hand combat scene happens, it feels like very fulfilling. But I think, you know, I think you're right. I think he did elevate that franchise quite a bit because he was bringing so much to it. His charm, his enthusiasm, you know, his quippy lines. I know we haven't gotten to Fast Six yet, but I mean, the way he improvises some stuff is just like, you kind of need that in this franchise to really like help sell the cheesiness of it. And they've had moments like that before, but when you have The Rock, like, that's 100%. You're like, we're committing, we're bringing a little bit of a different, unique tone to it, and we're going to really elevate this and make it a little bit ridiculous, but you're going to be on board because you love the characters no matter what. And I mean, I think everybody fell in love with Dwayne Rock Johnson's character, which is why he got a spinoff. So I think it was a really cool addition.
It's interesting watching this in retrospect, Sabrina, because I mean, obviously with everything that's been going on over the past few years, but watching this in retrospect, I was kind of like, I don't know if I can vibe with this guy, because obviously he says, like, these are just names on a list. I don't care if they did it or they didn't do it. I'm here. It's all about the law. Like, I was like, yo, am I watching, like, Dredd right now? Like, this guy's ridiculous. And he seems, like, almost, like, too, like, into, like, it's all about being a cop and the right and doing the right thing. And if you break even the smallest law, I'll shoot you in the face. And I'm like, I don't know if I like this guy, but because it's The Rock and because he, like, is flexing his muscles and saying goofy ass lines, you kind of vibe with him. How'd you feel about his introduction? And obviously the way that Brian introduced him in the movie, which I think is hysterical watching this movie back. He's like, yo, this man is Old Testament. He's from the Bible. He's bringing the blood and the bullets. And I was like, that's the best written scene in the whole movie. That's the best way to describe him.
No, I think that's the perfect way to reinvigorate a franchise, is to keep it at its core what it is, but then introduce a new character that people can just, like, really see vibe with everybody else. So even though we're sitting there and we're like, oh, he's clearly not a good guy, we get his motivations, like, straightforward, he does have that dialogue. And so it's still this, like, draw to him, even if we're not necessarily rooting for him for most of this film, there's still a draw with how entertaining he is on screen. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is literally the action star of right now. Like, if you're going to talk about that, like, he's the first name that comes to mind for me. So I really, really loved his character, especially, like, by the end of, like, Fast and Furious 8 or Fate of the Furious. He's one of my favorites. And so I haven't seen Hobbs and Shaw yet, but I'm excited to get into that one for other reasons that I will definitely mention later as well.
Yeah, RB3, what did you think of The Rock's introduction in this movie and kind of what he represents, especially to someone like Dom and Brian in this movie, considering he is, like, supposed to reflect that, like, what Brian could have become in an alternate timeline kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I always felt like he was interesting because he's, like, the best of both worlds. Like, he's, like, the tough, big brute that is Dom, but he's also the tight, strategic, military, like, you know, kind of cop dude that Brian is. And yo, Adam, I love you, my man. I can't let you call Vin Diesel white looking. You know what I mean? He's very, at the very minimum.
He's cut.
At the very minimum.
Italian, bro. Like,
isn't he like Italian?
At the very least, he's 2/11 black. At the very least. At the very, very least, 2/11. But, I mean, give me all the Italian. But, I mean, you get The Rock. You get him, you know, he's a little bit darker. He's not fully black, but he's a little darker. He's a little sweatier, like you said, just profusely. It's even at night. Like, how you sweating at night, my G? What's going on? And then, but he has, but it's also, like, way visceral, too. And I don't know if people remember at this time in The Rock's career, he was doing, like, kind of flipping back and forth between the comedy and the dramatic side, right? Like, he was doing Tooth Fairy. He was in The Other Guys. He did some other things. But he also was in Faster, which was the movie that came out right before Fast 5 in his filmography. And I remember seeing Faster when that came out in, like, 2010. And that was one where he was playing, like, almost straight up, like, anti-hero kind of thing. So he brought that same level of intensity to this franchise in a film where we have a lot of comedic relief. Like, we have a lot of Tyrese. We have a lot of Luda. We have the other Latino homies that they added. Like, they have so much comedic relief. It's kind of nice having that, like, stark, tactile, like, kind of antagonist. And you feel almost sad for him because you see almost all of his team get wiped out over the course of the movie by the actual bad guys in the movie, by the criminal cartel people. I can't let go of that scene when they're having that big, like, fight sequence in the middle of the streets. And you literally see him, he sees his entire crew just get, like, RPG'd from the top of the roof. And he, like, stands almost, gets blasted almost right in front of it. So that to me is just dope. It just goes to show you. And he ultimately ends up, you know, being friendly with the guy. So it was a really good evolution to see that story play out on screen like that.
I'm gonna push back on a little bit. I agree with you, but I do feel like you're right. Like in a world filled with like Tej and with Tego Calderon and Don Omar, who are the two rappers who play the two funny Latino brothers, it's almost like The Rock is the funniest one. And you're kind of right. Like just being himself, he's just a goofy, over the top character that he really does feel like he's coming from like a 90s version of this movie. And they just put him in a new version of it, which is great. The last thing I want to say about Fast Five, guys, and I tweeted this out like the previous night. I can't lie, y'all, and I said it in theaters when the Rock versus Vin Diesel fight happened. I was like, "Ain't no way, ain't no effing way." To shout out my boy Future, ain't no way Vin Diesel's beating the Rock in a fight. Like, bro, that's the most unrealistic part of this entire
I don't see. I saw you tweet that.
Franchise film. Filled with
I don't think
flying
that
cars,
great thing
with
is
like tanks
genuinely.
that is ridiculous. Vin Diesel is 6 foot flat, like 185 pounds. The Rock is 6'5", like 275.
All right.
He
Okay,
would
for one,
step on
RB3's
him.
so offended.
You
He
taking
would
30
step
pounds.
on him.
You taking 30 pounds off my man Vin
He's like
Diesel. He's at least
100
210.
pounds
He's
heavier
210.
than
What are
me.
you talking about? He's not. He's not.
He's like,
At least
yes,
you're
he
taking
is.
30 pounds off my man Vin. Vin's at least 210, right? And for two, listen. I don't think he actually won that fight. I think it was, and we know this now later because of we know the beef between them. And we know like they
Yeah.
can't contractually lose fights. But I think if you really
Yeah.
watch that fight close enough,
I
it really
watched
does
it.
end with a tie. It does end with a tie. Like it
No,
doesn't
because he ends
mostly
on
with a tie.
top. He ends on top of him and he puts the freaking wrench down.
But
Like
I feel
as
like The
if to
Rock let him
say,
get
like,
there.
I
Andres, I
won.
saw your tweet. I saw your
I
tweet,
feel like
and
The
when
Rock
I
let him
watched
get
Fast
there.
Five, when I watched Fast Five like days before that, that's the thing Brandon told me too. He's like, this is the most unrealistic thing in the entire
It's
franchise.
ridiculous. As someone who has been watching martial arts for years, like mixed martial arts and boxing fights and MMA, I know a tiny bit about martial arts, and I know if you weigh like 85 pounds and you're 6 foot five and the homie you're fighting is 6 foot, all you have to do is grab the guy and put your hand on him. It's over. The Rock is a monster. The Rock is like
The
his
Rock wasn't trying
biceps
to.
are like
The Rock had multiple opportunities in that fight to kill Vin Diesel. To kill Vin Diesel. To kill
Yeah.
him. He chose not to because he was like trying. He was just trying to fight him. He was just trying to put him down.
Yeah.
Now Vin Diesel was the one who was trying to kill The Rock, and he was ultimately the one who made because at that point in the story, The Rock had what or The Rock had literally killed a couple of his teammates, right? So
Sure.
he was bringing like blood to the conversation. The Rock wasn't trying to kill. There was multiple times in that fight I felt like The Rock could have made the kill shot, and he didn't.
Wrong.
But it was Vin
It's like
Diesel who
in
was making the shot.
cartoons. It was like
No,
in
man.
cartoons when they just like hold somebody's head and the other person's swinging. That's what The Rock could do to Vin Diesel, like
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
This is
that
what's so great
one-sided.
about them having riders where they're contractually obligated to not win, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Come on,
Don't know
y'all.
about
Y'all
that one,
gotta
man.
be with me on this. Vin Diesel's like 60, bro. Y'all need to
No,
chill.
he's not 6 feet. He's not 6 feet. He's not 6 feet. And for two,
I said he's 60, but sure.
He's 5'11" and three
all right,
quarters.
or he might be 60. But I mean, I don't know his age. But I will say, like, even though listen, we all saw martial arts movies where, like, Bruce Lee was taking on like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or
But that's
like,
Bruce Lee, bro.
I mean,
That's
but
the
that's what I
GOAT.
mean. But this is Vin Diesel's franchise. What do you
Vin
want him to do?
Diesel,
You don't want him not
he
be
grew up
represented?
like boosting cars in like a garage and crap. Like he is
Nah, but
not
then yeah,
Bruce Lee.
how
He's
you gonna
not
believe
Bruce Lee.
Vin Diesel could take on the military
Jason
and everything
Statham.
it takes on Jason Statham and subsequent movies if he
I
can't even take
don't.
on a Rock in a fight?
This is where it
Can't even
ends.
fight.
I'm gonna get
Yeah.
into that a little later, but let's move on to Fast.
So Vin Diesel can only fight Paul Walker.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I
But
do want
even
to see.
then, I still think Paul Walker can beat his ass.
Jesus.
Yo.
It's messed up.
Shout out to my boy
Vin Diesel's
Paul
about to
Walker,
walk into your house and
RIP.
be like, "Hey, I heard you got some beef with
Yo,
me."
I rock with your song, bro. That song was a vibe last year. I love that song, Vin
But
Diesel.
was
Keep
good.
singing. Keep singing, bro.
I listen to the Vin Diesel song, but I will say one more thing before we move on. I do appreciate Fast Five for its tactility, for how real it feels. I think a lot of it, subsequent Fast and Furious movies use a lot more CGI, but this one opted like not to in a lot of ways. And even that last
That
safe
bank
sequence where
heist.
they're, yeah, that bank heist sequence where they're actually dragging the safe through the streets
It's
of Rio de
insane.
Janeiro. They actually had a actual practical safe like that they were actually dragging around with cars and
Yep.
rigs all that stuff. And there were times they subbed it in for CGI, but for the most part, it was mostly real. So I think that's really cool. And all the action before that, up even before that sequence, was felt real and felt very, very gritty. So I appreciate Justin Lin for going that extra mile to make that possible.
Agreed. I'm actually going to agree with that, to the point that I say, if I'm being real, guys, and I know I'm probably going to be the only one who says it, so I'll take the crap. That's fine. Everyone's going to hate on me. I think this kind of goes downhill from here, if I'm being real. I think Fast Five was cool.
It's been a real pleasure. Bye, guys.
Like, he actually left. But I really do feel like this. Everything started to become slightly more CGI, slightly more kind of insane, to the
over
point
the top.
That a little too over the top, maybe.
But the thing that I can excuse this, because they're so aware of this. It's like, even like Dwayne coming into the franchise, he knew exactly what he needed to do. He understood that assignment and he just went for it. And that's why I don't know. I don't love like 6 and 8 as much, but I don't think it goes downhill at all.
The cool thing about 6, let's get into 6. 6 introduces us to the Shaws, or Shaw. I think it's, what's his first name?
Owen Shaw,
that's his first name, played by, damn it, I forget
Luke
his name.
Evans.
Luke Evans.
That's why we're here, Andres.
Gaston in Beauty and the Beast is how, that's how I know him. I know him as Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. Great movie. Anyway, I know. No one likes those live action movies. I do. I love them. And it kind of introduces us to like the bizarro team effect of like, you have the anti- team of what we know and love, as far as having these classic characters like a Roman, like a Tej, like all these characters we know. And obviously Letty is reintroduced in this film as well. And it introduces us to like how funny and ironic and kind of winking at the camera would it be if we had like the Injustice League or like the Anti-Squad, where we have the exact same crew, and they even pointed out in the movie, except they're like the foils of the team and their leader is Shaw. I think that's the best part of the movie, if I'm being honest, is kind of having that kind of anti-team to it. But what do you think overall of Fast 6, and what do you think of the introduction of this kind of team dynamic on the villain side, Adam?
Love it. No, I mean, I think it's cool. The villains in the other movies, not that I didn't necessarily care about them, like, they were interesting. I think they're really interesting villains. Like, Braga's interesting. Villains from the first and second are interesting. But now that you bring in another family dynamic that can, like, build off of the idea and the themes of family, but from a villainous side, you kind of, this gave us Helen Mirren as a villain, and I can't not love the woman. She's amazing. So it's like, I want to root for some of these characters sometimes. And then, you know, we get Deckard Shaw. So I think it's cool that they like kind of leaned into like, well, let's make the villains a family too. And I know that it's like loosely explored in this movie, because we only get the first Deckard. But I really like Luke Evans. And at the end of the movie, to see Vin Diesel and The Rock team up to kick the shit out of Luke Evans and a big dude and The Rock spitting and headbutting the guy, I'm like, this is exactly what I want. This is what I want. This is the best. So yeah, and I think this is the point where the stunts definitely start to lean in back into like the heavy CG. But some of the stunts are damn cool in this movie. Like, I know the runway is 50 miles and it's very unrealistic, but every mile was worth it at the end.
Yeah, I'm kind of going to go to you, RB3, because I know you're vibing with this, because I do think like, it kind of has that combo effect of like comedy and action, right? Where you're kind of laughing at the irony of this whole like family versus family, criminal versus criminal kind of thing. But at the same time, you're invested because you have this new dynamic that's introduced in this movie. Is that kind of the biggest selling point in the Fast and Furious 6?
I think for me, yeah, I definitely knew that Fast 5 was the biggest movie in the franchise. I mean, just the box office jump from Fast and Furious 4, Fast and Furious, made $360 million to Fast 5 making $626 million. Like, that's a huge, massive jump. So they kind of walk into this movie like, all right, whatever we did in that one, let's just do it again, but even like more crowd appealing. Yeah. So they went for adding as much as they could, and they went for the Shaw family. They even went for bringing Letty back from the dead, which, you know, is something that we saw at the end of the fourth movie. And And it's funny because I really feel like, you know, even though Justin Lin started with Tokyo Drift, when you look at like Fast and Furious, Fast Five and Fast and Furious Six, it really does like act as like its own like kind of story, because Letty ends up dying in Fast and Furious. She's gone for the entirety of the second one, and then she ends up coming back for the sixth one to join up with the team. So yeah, kind of acts like that in his own way, and I think that's really, really interesting. But also, just like you said, I love the opposite side team. I love the actual change from like Rio to London. I thought that was really cool to take us to the streets of the Great Brits. I just wish they would have been driving on the other side of the road, and I wish that would have like been like a new challenge for them. That's the only thing that I was missing. But otherwise, yeah, it was really, really, I thought it was dope. Like Adam, I know people are making fun of the runway. In my head, like when I saw it in theaters in 2013, I thought, oh, that makes perfect sense. And then when people started like, you know, actually doing math, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. But I still love it.
Who sits there and calculates like, that's 15 miles over the limit. I don't care.
Yeah,
take it a little bit on film physics.
It definitely did not bother me either. I definitely want to talk about Letty as well, Sabrina. What'd you think of the way they introduced her, bringing her back? And what'd you think of the whole like dementia angle as well?
The amnesia, yeah.
Amnesia.
I mean,
my bad.
I don't love it or anything. Like I don't think it's the most creative thing in the entire world. I do love the whole like antithesis of the families like Adam and RB3 talked about earlier. But this aspect, I love that we brought her back. She was one of my favorite characters. I absolutely love everything she represents. I think one of my biggest criticisms for all of these films is I feel like they don't really treat women on screen correctly. Like with Eva Mendes, she's literally just a throwaway character. Same thing with like Elena. I don't know. That's one of the things that I have like a criticism. It's not terrible. It's not bad. It doesn't ruin these films for me, but I just noticed they don't have as much care, but she does 100%. She is so badass. She is so strong. So bringing her back in this way and then having her be with the villains suffering from amnesia and then basically coming back and being like a skilled fighter and stuff, like where did this happen? So I'm so happy to have her back. I thought it was cheap the way they did it, but you know, I'm rolling with it. I was binging all the movies.
Yeah, I had a comment tell me the other day as far as like Vin Diesel beat Jason Statham in Fast 7, which obviously we haven't gotten to, but after Vin Diesel beat The Rock in a fight, anything is possible, bro. Flying cars, Michelle Rodriguez is a martial artist.
Yeah.
Like, anything is possible after that moment. I feel like that's the defining moment in the Fast franchise, because Fast 6 definitely elevated its stunts. Obviously, we talked about the runway scene. This is the famous tank scene, too, in this movie, is when they introduced that tank, which I actually think is kind of cool and kind of fun. A really cool entrance in this movie as well. Yeah, I really do feel like a lot of what Universal was thinking about, Adam, and this is kind of where I want to finish up on Fast 6, is how do we transfer these movies to a more worldwide appeal? And if we're being honest, one of the best ways to transfer to worldwide appeal is to elevate the stunts and the action, basically just add more of it. Make it longer and more effective and more over the top and insane, and just kind of make the story super simple. Mm-hmm. And that obviously brought it to, I think, nearly almost 800 million worldwide is what the movie was taken to. How do you feel about that kind of formula being taken into the Fast and Furious franchise? Because it's clearly there, in my opinion.
I think it makes sense. And like, I know I jokingly brought up the Marvel thing earlier, but I wouldn't be surprised if they saw the success of that franchise and they thought like, well, how do we make that concept and that idea of having a big ensemble and big action, how do we like make that work for us, because we have all these characters. And I think them experimenting with having post-credit scenes and dropping these reveals of like, well, Letty might actually be alive, or this character might have actually killed this character, maybe this character's alive. I think them playing with that, it was the reaction of that was a really nice, was a good way, I think, for them, an indicator for them to know going into the next movie, what should we focus on? What's something that, who's a character that people would want to see, or what's a storyline that we can kind of figure out? Because a lot of people were asking questions okay, Han dies in Tokyo Drift. Why is he in Fast and Furious? You know, how are we justifying these things? So I think this is the point where they really started to like post-it note their wall and to try to figure out like, how do we link all these things together? And if we do that, what is that doing for the audience? And I think at the end of the day, as cheesy as the franchise is, it is universe building. And it's super fun, in my opinion. Like, yeah, I think it's a very lazy shortcut to just give somebody amnesia and to say, like, by the end of the movie, I remember who you are. It's a very, very kind of, like, lazy shortcut. But it worked, and we got Letty back out of that. So I think, like, it was worth it, in my opinion. But I do think as, like, the franchise went on, it got a little bit better. You know, like, I feel like even though Elena was a character that I feel like could have been more developed, I think Mia and Letty have always kind of been the main female characters at the forefront. And, you know, I think that that also evolves as we go on into these other movies. But I think it was primarily, like, honestly, I think it was just understanding what audiences wanted. And instead of shying away from that, they leaned in. And, I mean, we made jokes about them going to space. And, like, no spoilers, but...
They might. And they there's might. The rumors with like the Jurassic Park and Fast and Furious crossover. As somebody who had never seen that it and want. Heard that, oh, no. Absolutely not. But for me at the time, I hadn't seen it, and I was just like, "What happens here?" Because I know it's about cars. Is there a
Velociraptor in Fast 9? What the hell?
I'm just like, "What happens here to get people even thinking about a crossover between these two franchises?" But a quick shout out for this film. There's that moment with Tyrese, which I feel like he is such an underrated character. He is so damn good in these films.
I hope it's but exactly what I think you're going to say.
He goes like, Mia, hide your baby oil when Dwayne The Rock Johnson comes up. And then Dwayne The Rock Johnson's like, you better hide your big-ass forehead.
That was improvised. So and I was good. Like, I love it. Ludacris's reaction to that is genuine.
Those moments are great, and obviously shout out to Tyrese and Luda and The Rock for doing those fun moments. I think those are kind of the best moments of the franchise for sure. But if I'm being honest, I'm going to tease, you know, the second part of our conversation, and then I'm going to toss the break. But I don't think that's a good thing all the way through. If I'm being honest, I kind of feel like maybe appealing to a more international audience with less talky talky smarty smarty and more explosion and more ridiculous stunts, I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing. And I kind of feel like after Fast 5 they might have worn out that stay. I think there's great moments in Fast 7, and we're going to get into them. We're going to break right now, guys, but after this we're going to be talking about Fast and Furious 7. So stick around.
This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh. With the 4-5 divide you in half. You getting at me equals a club half. You do the math, take you out the equation. This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh.
Did you watch First Cut Live this week? We talked about our anticipation for the new Loki show coming on Disney Plus. Check out this clip.
Anyways, I think I'll enjoy Loki. I think I will.
All of that?
I feel like I'm just not... I just don't feel like I don't know how to say this. I don't know if I'm vibing with the way that Marvel is making everything around. I just feel like, when are we gonna get over the MCU? Like, I don't know. Like, am I the only one who feels like the MCU is kind of tired out? Like, yeah.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? I haven't felt more invigorated by the MCU in years, man. I'm being real with you. I'm telling you something for real. How I'm feeling right now, I haven't felt this alive for Marvel in a long, long time. Like, since 2020, we was quiet or slow. 2019, we only had Endgame. And then before that, we didn't even have that much. But right now, I feel like we're like peaking Marvel. For me personally, I don't know. I don't know how other people feel out there. I don't know how y'all feel, but to me, I feel like we're getting better and better with these shows. Like, these shows and the movies. I haven't seen Black Widow. I haven't seen these other ones, but I just think they're going to be great.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's just me being over, like, this whole media conglomerate.
But then he ended it by going, but I'm excited.
Come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
What's up, guys? guys, we're back talking about Fast and Furious 7 now. Obviously, the first thing I want to do, address it up top, guys, because I really do feel like it still is significant, especially after rewatching these movies quite a few times, is the passing of Paul Walker. Obviously, a tragic passing. It was during a charity event. He really did love fast cars, and obviously that led to tragedy and obviously an awful death of him and the driver that was driving with him. I will never forget that moment, because if I'm being honest, Adam, I'm with you, bro. I saw this in theaters 2001. I saw this with my brother. My brother and I bonded over these movies. I low-key did get that little family, as you know, as ridiculous as it is, I did feel like these kind of characters were family, and I did feel a connection to these movies by this point. And I did feel like Brian was that kind of stereotypical, like, guy that you can kind of see yourself chilling with and hanging out with. And I did feel his death quite a bit. And the Fast and Furious franchise had the really tough job to do of incorporating this character back into this movie, using a variety of tricks and a variety of work and a variety of working with the family as well, with the Walker family. And all credit to James Wan, all credit to Vin for pulling this off, because I feel like that might have been the harder part of the movie, even more than the stunts, is doing this in a respectful way. And I feel like that was accomplished. I feel like if you can take away anything from Fast 7, besides, you know, all the crazy cinematic stuff, is the way they handle the Paul Walker tragedy in one of the best ways I've seen it in any movie. I don't know what you think about that, Adam, and how they handled that, because I really do feel like it's hard to talk about this movie and not talk about that.
Yeah, I remember when all of that happened, you know, I know that they took a break for like 3 months to try to figure out what they were going to do. And there was a little part of me that would have been totally okay with them coming out and saying, we're not going to do it. We don't feel comfortable doing it. We're going to, you know, scrap the movie and do something else. I would have been like, all right, it's a bummer. It's a shame. But then, you know, I thought about movies like The Dark Knight. And I know it's a little bit different because Heath Ledger had shot all of his stuff already. But had The Dark Knight not come out, we would have not seen what amazing work, you know, Heath Ledger did. And I think had they gone that route, not only would we not get to see, you know, Paul Walker's final performance in this franchise, but I think we wouldn't have got that send-off that we got, that I think was done so incredibly well. And for James Wan to come into a franchise where he had primarily been known for horror, he hadn't done too much action, and it's a franchise that he had no involvement with previously, that's a lot on your shoulders. Like, already the pressure of making that movie as equally successful or more successful as the previous, and then that happening, I can't even imagine what kind of pressure that was. But, you know, I think it was done in a masterful way, and I think it was done in the best way possible. And without having Caleb and Cody, Paul Walker's brothers, there, it really would not have worked. Like, I think you really needed a physical presence to be there in his shoes when they needed it. You couldn't have just replaced it with CGI. It would have not worked. Mm-hmm. And a huge, huge, like, kudos to Weta Digital for what they did, because looking at it now, you know, 5-6 years later, it's a little rough around the edges, but I think for how good it looked at the time, it was really well done and very tastefully done. And that ending scene, I mean, there was not a dry eye in the theater when those cars part ways. Everybody understood, both like in the movie world and in the real world. That's like, I feel like where the boundary line was broken, and like that concept and that theme of family, like, really hit home. And it was felt like beyond the screen and in front of the screen. So it really is an achievement the way that they were able to make all that work. And the movie's still super enjoyable. And I know that as these movies gone on, they got more and more ridiculous, but I think that ridiculousness helped kind of put the tragedy in the back of your mind and not let it be in the forefront. You got to just enjoy the movie, and then you had this beautiful send off at the end, which was so great. So yeah, I think it's my second favorite movie in the franchise, and I think they did an incredible job finishing that movie out, because I think it could have gone a completely different way, but I was super satisfied as a fan.
Yeah, I really do feel like they did kind of slightly break that barrier between audiences, that wall, as far as saying like, yes, this is in movie, in universe, but it's also slightly out of universe and in real life. And the way they handled it, like I said up top, is one of the most respectful, best ways I've seen it done in any movie. And this is not necessarily, as we said, the most serious type of film. And yet the way it's handled is so respectful to the Walker family, to his friends, to his coworkers. And I remember, if I was thinking back at it during that time, if I could put myself back in my shoes during that time, I think I was a big proponent of them not doing it, if I'm being honest, because I'm a big proponent of always respect family, never appeal to something, especially if it wasn't a car accident. Like, to me, that was too much, too close to home. And yet, looking back at it now, the more I see, when people think of films, they think of more than one person, right? And you think of what probably he would have considered. And the fact that it did have that family element to it from his actual brothers, it's always something that I respected. Even, you know, thinking back at it now in The Rise of Skywalker, one of my favorite things about it is the fact that Billy Lord did sign off on everything. She was heavily involved with everything. She even played a younger Leia in the movie, almost as a tribute to her mother. So I feel like that was a big element of it, because she was in the movies and she did have that sign off of it. So as long as his brothers were there and did sign off of it, I feel like that was really well handled. How'd you feel about it, Sabrina?
The biggest thing I would say about this is like respect. I always talk about when people use likeness, like a musician's hologram, and their family is so against it. It's like, as a fan of that person, even though it could be exciting to be able to see your favorite person, to know that their family or themselves would never want to be put in that position, it's just really odd to me. But knowing that they were there, they helped out with this, this was something that they were on board for, I just think it's really beautiful, because when we even look at the character of Brian, that's been like the thread throughout all of these films, basically. Of course, there's everybody else, but he already had this shift where he was going into like domestic life and he was having this like new chapter. So we have this beautiful send off where he's with his family and it's so warm, and also family on screen with their characters. But also, these actors worked together for like 13 years playing these same characters. So when they have that like final send-off at the end of the film, it is so emotional, and there's such a weight to it, because you know they're talking about him, they're talking about Paul Walker. And when this happened, I wasn't aware of these films, I hadn't seen these films, I hadn't seen any Paul Walker films at the time, but I just remember obviously seeing this on the news and seeing how tragic it was, because he was an immense talent and he lended so much of himself to this franchise and to film in general. So yeah, the way that they handled it, very, very respectful. Like Adam said, I have spent the past 2 weeks with these characters, and I haven't been that emotional in so long during a film. And I've heard See You Again, a Wiz Khalifa song, so many times because it was a huge hit back in like 2015. I saw Fall Out Boy in concert twice, and that summer they had Wiz Khalifa open up for them. So he performed this song that year. And so like, the song was already like, you know, it's sad, but when you're actually seeing it in like the context of the film, it is emotional. So yes, after spending so much time, I can't even imagine, as like original fans, like you guys seeing these films in theaters and seeing this like over a decade later, how attached you are, because just over the past few weeks of me seeing these characters, it's like the weight of the real life element, and then also the character and the arc that he went through, all of that just came together so beautifully to like tie a bow onto the story of Brian. And it's something that's going to continue to be his legacy forever. And it's so beloved.
Well, that song actually blew up because of this movie. Yeah. I remember it happening in real time as I was watching it in opening night. And then the song just became like a massive hit because of the film. And I always associated to this moment in the movie. I know a lot of people maybe, not everyone associated with it, but that's why it blew up, is because of the movie.
Yeah.
RB3, I definitely want to get your reaction to seeing that moment in theaters and hearing Wiz Khalifa, See You Again, start playing, and Paul Walker doing that final farewell to Vin Diesel's character and to obviously the Fast family.
Well, I think the, if I'm not mistaken, I think the song came out a little bit before the movie did. Like, I think the movie I think the song was almost like another trailer for the movie, if I'm not mistaken. I think it came out like a few weeks before, and then they had like a bunch of clips from the movie. So I remember it getting that like buzz like before the movie came out. And I even remember listening to the song a few times even before seeing the movie, because I was like, man, this is tough. I remember vividly where I was at when Paul Walker, when I heard the news of Paul Walker died. I was at a friend's birthday party, a friend from high school's, and I just remember looking at my phone and just being absolutely devastated. Like, this was one of the, for me, this was one of the first celebrity deaths that like really like rocked me to my core. You know, like there was later ones like Nipsey and like a few others that like were very impactful. But for me, this was right at home, because like I said, I'm a big fan of these movies, a big fan of this franchise, and just how young Paul Walker is too. Like, he's kind of like almost the baby in this franchise in and of itself. Like, you know, you're kind of joking about Vin Diesel being 60. He is actually a little bit older than Paul Walker, and you could kind of feel that in their dynamic. So it's like losing the young, bright energy who was kind of our POV character into this franchise to begin with, which is really tough. And just seeing Paul Walker in other stuff, I mean, he was also just in a few other movies that we love the man. I know at one point he was considered to play Superman too. So there's, you know, he was very beloved, and, you know, it was always a tough question of what they were going to do with his character, even though they have filmed, you know, so much of it, but were they going to edit them out? Were they going to add more? Like, people weren't sure. But yeah, seeing that moment in the theaters was really heartbreaking. Seeing that last like drive off into the sunset, I love that they didn't like kill his character. I know a lot of people were like thinking his character might go out the same way he would, and that would have been like really dark, and I feel like disrespectful. I like that they never killed him off. I like that he just kind of drives off into the sunset and has a happy ending. I feel like that's the most appropriate, and I feel like that's the most classy ending you could probably have for this. And you know, they use CGI from like unused takes of like previous movies, and a lot of times when you see like CGI humans in film, it really, really takes you out. I know for me, it took me out when I saw Rogue One at the very end, seeing the young Carrie Fisher. It took me right
Tarkin
out.
Tarkin too.
But, Tarkin.
Tarkin yeah. as well, yeah. But for this, it actually like felt really natural. I don't know if it was because they used like a bunch of backlight or because of the way they like shot it or framed it or whatever. But it actually did look like human and real. And the parts that looked artificial felt artificial because it felt like a memory, like a dream almost. So I really loved it. I really loved what they did with this movie. And I loved the scenes that you could tell he was actually practically like filming, because they seemed like really exciting. Like, I remember seeing the scene when they were when him and like a couple other people were like running up the building with like their big AKs. I'm like, dang, man, this is a true evolution of this franchise. And they were already introducing Kurt Russell into the franchise at this point with this movie. I said before too, like The Rock, The Rock, he wasn't even originally supposed to be in it, but they added him in like after his death. And you could kind of tell, like, if you rewatch Furious 7, like all of the Rock scenes are like separate from everybody else.
When I am the cavalry.
Yeah, exactly. So I love it. Also, only thing that gets me a little tight is that I wish Universal didn't call this Furious 7, because the original title for Fast and Furious 6 was Furious 6. If you watch it, the actual title says Furious 6 on it, and you're like, that would make perfect sense.
Fast Their excuse 5. Was people would get confused, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, but the next one's Furious 7. How is that confusing? How is that not confusing?
Yeah, James Wan said he was homaging the Seven Samurai.
Oh, that's good then. I like that. Okay, I like that then.
Justified.
Yeah, I feel like obviously to kind of put a button on the Paul Walker situation, it's interesting, man, especially, and I know Sabrina, you're just watching these for the first time, but especially Adam and RB3, kind of growing up with these films, you always felt like Brian or Paul was kind of that everyman, chill dude. Like, I'll never forget, we talked about it last week, how he's kind of introduced to this crazy street racing culture with Hector coming up to him. And he says, yo, Brian Spielman, man. And he's like, yo, typical white boy name. Tell me about your car, bro. Tell me about your car. And he's like, he seems like that one chill dude, like literally chill dude, because I think that's kind of who he was in real life. He was a surfer. So chill dude is like the perfect way to describe him. Who I can, you know, we can all kind of see ourselves like, you know, chilling with or hanging out with. And I feel like he had that kind of family dynamic to himself, which made him even more relatable. The fact that, you know, the one criticism is that, you know, his acting was just him playing himself. And I always felt like that was a good thing because it kind of added to that element of like, he is just who he is, just a normal, you know, regular guy who really likes cars and likes hanging out and likes chilling with his family. And I felt like you can feel that on screen. So obviously much love to the Walker family and much love to the crew for making this happen. Because I feel like the biggest element, and I'm going to go back to you, Adam, of Furious 7 is James Wan's directing. Like, my God, this guy can direct. And as a big, big stan of Aquaman, shout out to Aquaman, great movie. James Wan knows how to do action and he knows how to make it crazy, make the camera constantly be in movement. How'd you feel about the evolution of directing between, obviously no diss to Justin Lin, but how did James Wan elevate this franchise with his directing style?
Yeah, I was really sad when Justin Lin was not coming back, and it was a schedule thing. You know, he was in the middle of finishing Furious 6 and they were like, next movie. He's like, well, I can't overlap these. It's insane. So I was a little apprehensive because I had seen The Conjuring, but I'm not, at that time, I was not super, super familiar with James Wan. So, you know, I was kind of going into it thinking like, okay, well, what is this guy going to do? But even just the fight scene between Dom and Deckard Shaw, the way he uses the camera where he's like spinning the camera 360 and he's moving the camera in certain directions. There's even like a fun little, I don't know if it was purposeful, but it feels like a little homage to Crank where the camera is like following Jason Statham and it's very Crank style. So I think he was, because he had never done a movie like this, he was able to just kind of experiment. I mean, the fight that Hobbs has with Shaw is also equally insane. Like, they're flying through, you know, most of that building, and it just, I think the fights were the things that benefited the most. I think the fights in the other ones were fine, but I think this one, it felt like it had a little bit more style and a little bit more substance. And I think what you guys were talking about, you know, it like doesn't fully lean into like this Asian cinema, but you could feel like there was a little bit of inspiration, and James Wan wanted to kind of like, well, what if we did make the fights a little bit more sophisticated and we showed them off a little bit more and we chose specific angles and stuff. I think that's what made that fun. And then on top of that, I think he did an amazing job with the action sequences as well. And as ridiculous as they get, they jump a car from building to building. It's super fun and engaging. So so I think, you know, he was really able to bring that to it. And I think also every director just directs people differently as well. And I think he was able to get some like great performances out of a lot of these actors. And I think that all of those elements were kind of really necessary for this movie to really feel like it did the job that it was meant to do. Be super fun and entertaining, but also pay respect to the main, one of the main leading actors of this franchise. And I think, yeah, so I think that's what he brought, was a lot of just sensibilities and very specific new sort of like look and feel and direction.
Yeah, I feel like his style is so, you know, unique and something that you can recognize right away. And you see that, Sabrina, with the opening scene. As insane as it is, it did feel like, yo, this guy is like making a movie, and he's making like a big movie with that crazy Warner sequence introducing Jason Statham's character and seeing the carnage that he has inflicted to those people there. What'd you think of that opening?
Well, that introduction, it's like, this guy does not mess around. Of course I knew we were going to see him in like Hobbs and Shaw and different things like that. But it really just sets the tone for this villain. And it shows like, yo, he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And he does not care. Like, he doesn't care at all. That's the difference between like him and his brother. I feel like Deckard Shaw is going 100%. I didn't see, and this is no like bash to Luke Evans at all, but I didn't see like as much menace with his character. Jason Statham brings that to a whole nother level. And James Wan direction always has just like so much energy. And then when he needs to, like in the Conjuring films or other things like that, he really, really has that warmth and he has that connection and chemistry with all the actors. Because of course, directors are the ones that bring out these performances. The actors are great, but if it's a bad director behind it, it's going to feel weird. And we've seen that in other films. But something about what James Wan brought to this just made it something so unique and so special. This is my second favorite out of all of them. Like I said earlier, my double feature for this would be the first one and this one. Yes, there's a lot that you're going to miss out on, but it is just so good. And it really, really, really does drive home like that theme of family and that theme of like sacrifice. And you're going to do whatever you can to keep everybody that you love safe. And it's that idea of like a surrogate family, because even when they meet somebody and they're brand new to the team, the second they click and the second they vibe, they're in it forever. Like, and I just absolutely love seeing that on screen. So yeah, that opening sequence, setting up Jason Statham, whew, insane, nuts.
Yeah, RB3, I think we're both big fans of James Wan, and I really do appreciate the way he chooses to set up his action and really deliver on it and make it engaging, not just with what's happening in the camera, but the way the camera engages with the action. How'd you feel like he elevated the franchise with this movie?
Well, I feel like he elevated the franchise in certain ways. I think in other ways, from being real, I think there might have been some devaluing of the franchise. And I think this is really the first movie where I felt like this is no longer human beings doing these things anymore.
I'm going to agree with you. There's a point. If you want to go there, let's go there right now. All right, guys, here I am, the villain of the podcast. I feel like there's a point in the third act where it just gets so silly, so ridiculous, that it just took me out of the movie completely. I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, RB3, but what do you feel like are the moments that, and obviously all credit to Juan for what he delivered, because I feel like that's not necessarily him. I feel like that's what they gave him, and he's like, hey, just shoot this because this is what we wrote. And he was like, sure. But I feel like there is moments in the movie where they kind of chose to do stuff that was kind of insane.
I mean, yeah, I love, like y'all said, like Adam said, I love the fight sequences. I think those are truly elevated, I think, and they feel more tactile. And they are a little more exaggerating. You're all like, dang, how did everybody become a martial arts expert overnight? I'm like, I don't know about that. But
Vin Diesel.
And Letty. I mean, I don't know what Letty was just like a mechanic. Now she's like taking down Ronda Rousey.
And Vin Diesel in Fast Five.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I mean, come on.
See? He can't beat The Rock, man. It all goes back.
The thing that got me with all of these is like, there's so many stunts. Like, again, this is not a detriment and this doesn't take me out because I feel like the film knows exactly what it is and they know what they're bringing to the table. And that self-awareness, I feel like kind of absolves them from like me criticizing it over that, because there's 1,000 times where it's like, oh yeah, Vin Diesel's, what is he going to do right here? Oh, he's going to drive off a cliff. Like, no, you would not survive that. But you know, you got to do what you got to do in this one.
I forgot about that part. Yeah.
Sabrina brought up the exact moment that I was like, okay, I have to let this stuff go, because
when
there's a choice of, do we drive on the road or do we drive down a mountain? And the choice is drive down the mountain. Then it's like, okay, this is not reality anymore. This is not,
is that a good thing though? Like,
I'm surprised though, because like those, what you're talking about, that happened to me already in Fast Five. And since that movie, I'm like, oh, okay. We're basically they're just unstoppable.
But I feel I feel like they take it to another level though, because at least Fast Five, it's silly, it's fun, it's over the top. But oh no, I saw Fast Eight and I was out. I was like, I'm done.
You just have to suspend that your disbelief for this, or else it doesn't work. Because when they're surrounded and that's like the only way out, we want these characters to survive. So like they're like cats; they got like multiple lives.
And down the 80-story building and surviving, I'm in.
But I feel like there's ways to do it, though. There's action franchises that are kind of insane and over the top, but still feel like you're in it, right? Not like you're in an anime where there's no rules and you're just floating in the air. And
my problem is the exact same problem I have with Aquaman. I think James Wan is great at directing
action. I love Aquaman.
I think he's great at directing action. He just does not know how to end an action sequence. Like, you can't end an action sequence.
It'll just go on forever.
Yeah, or just don't. Yeah, just don't drive off the cliff at the end. Don't crash a building from the car from one building to another. Don't. And this is the most egregious part. And I love this movie, by the way. I love Furious 7. But the most egregious part to me was seeing The Rock, or no, sorry, seeing Vin Diesel literally Hulk smash an entire parking garage on type of Jason Statham. Like, he was literally
that
the
was Hulk. Insane.
He was like the greatest line of all time.
I bet he wrote that scene. I almost guarantee he wrote that scene.
Greatest line of all time is who always wins? Guess who? What was it? Something about a street fight, and guess who always wins in the
guess
street
who always
fight?
Wins the fight.
The street. Yeah, and then he does the stunt, and literally all of it falls. And then the crazy Jason Statham survives. He survives that. He walks away from that. I don't know how that happens.
Is that a good thing? Like, I don't see that as good. I see that as Vin Diesel literally taking pen to paper, going up to James Wan and being like, yo, I got the best line.
I'm the producer. Let me have this moment.
Look, you're like, okay, I wrote Vin Diesel. It's about the street.
Hey, $1 billion. Come on.
Yeah. Seriously. And it's true. He wrote that scene and it made $1 billion. And he was right. But I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with what I was saying about Fast and Furious 6, about how this movie was starting to reach that 800 million, 1 billion mark, and a lot of people I know you have here in the notes, RB3, is that a Paul Walker connection? It could be, but I also feel like that's just also a connection to what studios start to do when it comes to marketing to international markets, when they start to say, hey, let's take out all the logic, let's take out all the dialogue, let's take out anything that has anything to do with characters and personality, and let's just do ridiculous action, over the top, insane. And it's just like, this is why the movie's so big in China. This is why the movie's so big, because it just became so over the top, so insane, so big, that it's just like, as an audience member who's been following these movies since Part 1 in 2001 in theaters, I'm kind of like, I don't know how I can stay involved. Like, I get if someone else gets into them, but me personally, I'm just like, how silly are we going to get? And now it's like rumors of Jurassic Park and, like, you know, flying into space. And I'm just like, I don't know if I'm about it, man. I don't know. I don't know if it's for me.
I mean, like, it's a huge franchise that's not based off of like a comic book or something like that. Yeah. And it's still able to take this to a completely another level and like get in this audience that just knows that we're going to see something that's like a huge spectacle. We're going to enjoy it. There's going to be that emotional tie to it as well, because like, think about anything like John Wick wouldn't be able to do any of the things that he does. Like, he can't survive all of this.
I think the two best action movies of all time are T2 and The Matrix. I know you backed me up on The Matrix, Adam, and those have huge, ridiculous stunts, and it all feels like it's insane and over the top, but it still feels like there's something there. There's actually something you can grab onto, whether it's Morpheus, whether it's Neo, whether it's the story or the themes or something there. Same with T2. T2 has like a truck freaking diving over a highway, and it's sick as hell, and it still holds up. And I feel like there's ways to do big, giant, ridiculous, insane stunts that are worth $250 million and can make a lot of money and still kind of make you cry at the end and still make you feel something and not just be
cried.
Yo, the street is like back. And, but that's like a specific Paul Walker moment.
It's still beautiful. Yeah, regardless.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for me is this is just me personally. I'm willing to forgive the ridiculousness of the action as long as I'm invested in the characters. And because I've been on the journey with these characters, you know, up to that point, I guess it would have been like 14 years, I was invested in them and I loved those characters. And of course, you know, Paul Walker situation had a lot to do with it, but I really like genuinely love these characters. So when they do ridiculous things like that, I don't know, I guess for me, it just kind of makes it even more fun and more playful. But I do agree. I think there is a line that if you go too far and you lose the characters and you lose that element of the relationships and the friendships and the family, and you focus too much going in one direction where it's just the action and the spectacle, then I do think you start to lose that sort of stuff.
Well,
but I think this movie like held it together mostly for me.
Well, kind of going into Fast 8 or Fate of the Furious, whatever it's called. Is that even the same character? Like, I don't think that's even the same character. Vin Diesel's character in that movie, I'm just like,
I will say something controversial. I think they should have just ended the franchise after Furious 7. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on that.
I think it was a really good ending, and I know that it mostly just wraps up Brian's story. But I feel like you told everything you really needed to tell. And I know that it continues to like set up the Shaw family and Hobbs and Shaw and all that stuff, which is great. But there definitely is some, there is an element of the movie that's missing when you don't have Paul Walker and Jordana Brewster. Like Jordana Brewster, because she's involved with Paul Walker, now has to basically like be on the sideline. They find ways to bring her back, obviously. But so that to me was like, that's an element, that brother element between Dom and Brian is something that I think is hugely missing. And they try to do it with Vin Diesel and The Rock, but as we know, those two did not get along on that set. And you feel that tension. And it's weird to me that that all that stuff happened in a movie where Vin Diesel is essentially the villain of the story. And I still like the movie, but after the first time I saw it in theaters, I definitely walked out and I was like, yeah, I'm still invested in these characters, but there is something missing. There's a little piece of the pie that's not there that I wish was there. And that kind of continues on to the next one as well.
Yeah, I do feel like they kind of, I don't know. I mean, I literally just said like it went downhill after Fast Five. So to me, it just felt like by Fast Eight, I was like, this isn't even cohesive anymore. I don't even know if it's the same characters anymore. They're playing like, they're playing like, this is like Agent, what is that guy's name in Falcon and Winter Soldier? Like, he's basically like a super soldier at this point. And he's like, it just felt so different.
I mean, yeah, they're doing crazy stuff. I mean, they are doing ridiculous stuff. But, I mean, I felt like this movie is ridiculous. But also, I felt like it was the same level of ridiculousness as Furious 7. I just felt like the main difference was, like Adam said, making Vin Diesel, like, the villain of sorts. Like, having him mind controlled, like, to a certain extent. Or, you know, controlling him through kidnapping Mia and...
Persuasion.
And, yeah.
Elena and
the child. And I just didn't think that was, I just felt like that was kind of contrived. You know, I felt like that was a little, like, very standard villainy of it. But I do think it was really interesting having, like, I think there's elements of this movie as individual elements that are really great. Like, I love Charlize Theron wearing the, wearing those dookie braids, playing Cypher. That was great. Having F. Gary Gray directing this movie, he was coming right out of Straight Outta Compton. So he was like, he was kind of a hot name at that point. I do just wish there was a little more, and it has some comedic elements, but I do wish there was a little more comedy. I think this movie, definitely, it has some cheesy jokes, but I felt like it wasn't self-aware enough. Especially at the point where we see cars literally flying out of parking lots and littering the streets and like raining cars and
which
cars.
Looks ridiculous and not real.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of tough stuff. And again, if you're dealing with a theme of like automated cars and like self-driving cars, that could be a really cool theme in and of itself. It just was so much. And then the submarine thing. You know, I don't know how cars are driving on ice. Like, that's a little crazy.
How the hell does The Rock push a missile with his bare hands?
That's that. Yo, the man is 6'5", 270. I go
no!
back to
it. No.
That's realistic.
I do want to point something out that I think RB3 brought up that is very valid. I do think that this Fate of the Furious and Fast 9, and this is not a spoiler for Fast 9, they really start to lean into the tech really heavily. And I feel like it starts to complicate very basic plots. And I think when you start to do that and you try to be like too tech savvy and too tech crazy, you start to pull away. You start to try to be like serious and very plot heavy. I'm like, that's not what made the Fast and the Furious movies great. You're not there for the crazy. Like it's Point Break. It's a Point Break remake. So you don't have to do all that. I think it tries too hard to be like Mission Impossible Bond when it should just go back the other direction and just kind of stay in the Ocean's 11 Point Break territory, which is what made it so great. I think those are like my biggest things about the movie. It has nothing to do with F. Gary Gray. I think he's a great director. Straight Outta Compton is amazing. And so I think like he really came in.
Friday's amazing too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think he came in and this is the script that he got, and it was like, yeah, we're leaning into tech, and we're like, I don't give a shit about the tech.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Go ahead, Sabrina. I want to hear your thoughts on
Well,
this movie.
this was the only one that I genuinely disliked. I didn't find a lot of like redeemable parts about this film at all, from the story to the villain to everything. Jason Statham, I did not think he's redeemable at all. He literally set a bomb for Brian's family, and then he's sitting there like saving a baby, even though that moment was funny. And like when I'm watching it, I'm like, this is hilarious. Like this entire fight sequence that he has with the baby, like whipping him around and like grabbing him and like literally shielding himself from bullets with the baby carriage. I thought those were humorous, but like honestly, once it was over, I thought it was completely forgettable. I think it was the most forgettable entry in the franchise. So it's probably going to be the one that I don't really go back and watch. But yeah, overall, they did Elena dirty. It's again, it goes back to what I said in our last episode last week. Just the women in these films typically, like a lot of these characters, like Gal Gadot, like Elena in this one, they bring her back and literally just have a tragic end for what? Like for what? Just to make somebody look like a very, very serious villain. It really wasn't necessary. There wasn't enough to latch onto with this one. There wasn't enough substance with what they were trying to do. It felt like everything was just like it was there and it was cheap and we saw it and it happened. And then once it was over, it doesn't really stick with you the way that the other films did. And I totally understand going this type of route because this franchise is based off of humans. And this is the eighth film. We have a ninth film coming. There's Hobbs and Shaw. There's so many films in this franchise that you have to keep it refreshing and exciting, but you can't lose what it is at its core. And I think this is the only film that really lost what it was.
I agree with that, obviously. I feel like they were losing it for a minute there, but that's just my opinion, which is why I kind of feel like where does an audience member, where does this franchise go, right? I think that's my next question. And obviously everyone's joking about Fast Nine and space and dinosaurs, but when does the franchise become not what it was, or not even what the characters were initially, and just become, you know, the most popcorn BS, nothing makes sense, nothing matters, points don't matter because it's going to make a lot of money overseas. And that's when it's like, when does it start to become Transformers, y'all? Because I feel like we're there. We're there, fam. I don't know. That's just my question to you guys. Where does this franchise go, Adam? Because I don't know what's going.
That's a really good question. Yeah, it's tough. I won't talk about Fast Nine spoilers, but I think it. This is supposed to be, 8, 9, and 10 are supposed to be like the concluding trilogy of the Fast and Furious saga, right? Whatever. I think going bigger is not the right direction to go, because I don't know how much bigger you can go. I think bringing it back to something of like a Fast Five is probably the best direction to go in, because I think like it's so hard to talk about when you've seen the movie. But at the end of the day, I think like the most important thing in these movies, and the only thing that we care about, is the relationships between the characters, and at the end of the movie, them having a barbecue and everybody celebrating. Like that to me is like what makes the movie the movie. It's that family element. And I think when you try to be too serious and also a bit meta at the same time, it breaks all of sort of like what made the franchise great, because now you're making references to things that like happen, and why do they happen, and how do they happen? How do we justify that we've like done all these things and nothing's happened to us? And you're like, I really don't need, like, I don't need these being conversations in the movie, you know? Like, we can talk about it outside of the movie, and that's fine. But when the movie starts to do that, I'm like, I don't care about that. I care about the friendships, and I care about family. Like, family to the point where the Fast Five was kind of like the perfect example of bringing people back and uniting everybody, and everybody being on the same page. And even though they come from different backgrounds and they all have different experiences, we made it work as like a team unit. And I think that's what like makes superhero franchises popular too, is like when all these characters unite, you get to see them all from their different worlds and they all work together. But, you know, so I think like, they need to kind of tone it back, and they need to stop trying to go bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and head back into what makes it great, which is the characters and their relationships. Some of that stuff they really tried to do, but it not everything worked for me, and I feel like it took away from what the plot was actually trying to be or what the story was trying to be. But it just ends up kind of being muddy, in my opinion. So if it was up to me, I would say scale it back down a little bit and don't try to shoot for the stars, literally.
Yeah. What do you think, Sabrina?
Well, I think going in different directions and like staying on like a similar path, like obviously we've seen them deal with like cartel and different people like that. Keep it like that. It's believable up until this point that like, or not believable, but I can excuse it with like Ludacris just being a normal guy. And then how we see him in like Fast Five, you know, we can like evolve the characters in this way. But then again, like at the core, whatever the story is, just like make sure we have that connection with all these characters. I saw like the trailer for F9 and I have no idea. I don't know anything about it. But like I saw Lucas Black is in it. Like I'm seeing all these different things. And I don't know. Like I don't necessarily know. Just make an effective movie. You don't have to worry about like the spectacle. Like you don't do the spectacle just to have that on screen. Really think about the substance in it, because that's something that I think they've done successfully literally up until Fate of the Furious. Like I thought Fate of the Furious was the first one that I was like, okay, yeah, this is mostly just dumb movie. And I still have Hobbs and Shaw to watch. So I'm looking forward to that, because I do really love Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But even with this new one, like introducing John Cena, and now it's like, oh, Vin Diesel had a brother, John Cena. What? Like, yeah. In what world yeah. Is any of this make any sense
I'm
at all?
I'm over it. I'm over it, if I'm being honest. I do have a pitch, though, if we keep going this way. RB3, Fast 10. There's an evil supercomputer that's attacking the crew.
Oh, here we
and
go.
At the end of the movie, we find out it's Jesse. He's been living in a computer. He uploaded his consciousness. He's back, and he's the villain. That would be awful.
Wait,
yeah, yeah. And then call it the Winter. No, I'm kidding. Winter Soldier. Zola, well, I've been living in a computer for 70 years.
A Frosty and the Furious.
Yeah.
I mean, like the villain
shout out to
from,
Zola.
The villain from Too Fast, Too Furious, we have that moment with Tyrese where he's like, oh, like, whatever. And he's like, oh, he's going to come back for you. Bring something like that. Have it be a little bit more grounded. Have this guy come in with his like goons or something to this yeah. extent. Like, do something else. Tie it up. I do agree with Adam what he said earlier about like after 7, I think this would have been in like near masterpiece of a freaking action
I think after
franchise.
5, but yeah, after 7.
Yeah, we get it, Andres. It goes downhill for you. We get it.
You after shut 7. Your mouth.
After 7, you're right. I do feel, but
I
but
think
it makes
it
too
really
much money, right?
Perfect.
It makes too much money. So
yeah, exactly. And if you could bring in people like John Cena, who people love him, he's also yeah, really, China. Really funny. He's funny and he's great with action films. So what did you
say? I said China, yeah. China loves them.
Oh, do they? Yeah.
Yeah. Ni hao. I feel like I'm talking about that video. You guys know what
yeah,
I'm talking about.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. That's what I feel. You see what I'm saying, though? Like, I feel like this is all it is now. It's just, let's just cater to the Chinese audience and they'll give us money.
They
co-produce the movie.
Hey, listen, I was going to say, most of these movies...
Transformers 5, let's do it.
Well, listen, bro, I mean, whatever it is, whatever they got to do in order to keep... because honestly, at the end of the day, I think what's most impactful about the Fast and Furious franchise is that it is a group of diverse people, you know, from all different walks and backgrounds who are in this franchise. And, you know, there's always this conventional Hollywood myth that diversity doesn't sell, black doesn't sell, brown doesn't sell.
It's
but this
opposite.
Kind of this flies right in the face of that. And for as much corniness and over the top this franchise is, it is a franchise that promotes that in the best ways possible. Especially when I see it again, every time I see these movies, I see them in Carson, I see them in Torrance, I see them in, you know, LA, like areas where it's like, you know, very black heavy theaters and, you know, very diverse theaters, and people love them. People lose their minds. People wait, you know, to see these movies. Me and the homies are already you know, trying to get our tickets to see this the Fast Nine, and that doesn't come out to the end of the month. So, you know, it's just something that's been a tradition for a lot of people for a long time, and I think it's something that has impacted a lot
since the first movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Since the first movie, yeah. And I know you said your point, obviously, about the two leads being white, but it did low-key on the low-low, man. When you see all the Asian homies there, you see all the Mexican homies there, you see Ja Rule come out with Monica, it means something, right? Like, it is kind of, like, cool because it's a different, diverse group. So I think that is kind of the biggest selling point of these movies and why it means a lot to a lot of people. I'm with you, RB3, on that. Let's hope they go back to that. By the last movie, I haven't seen Fast 9. I'll catch it eventually. But either way, Adam, you've been a trooper. You've stuck with it. You've held it down with my rants and my poor impressions of Vin Diesel. I appreciate you, man, sticking around a little longer than usual. Where can everyone find you, brother?
My social media is very easy. It's just my name, Adam Plavik. If you search Heroes Reforged on YouTube, I'm there every week making reaction videos and talking about movies, and we'll probably definitely be talking about the Fast and Furious because we have very differing opinions about the movie too.
There you go. Obviously, guys, go check out Heroes Reforged. There's some good homies there. Sabrina, where can everyone find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SabrinaXMonica, also on Twitter at SabrinaOnFilm.
RB3.
Sorry, I was muted. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at DirectorRB3.
You can find me at Squad Leader Race, guys. And obviously, subscribe to First Cut if you haven't done so already. Follow us at First Cut TMO as well for new drops and more news on the First Cut channel. Either way, guys, for the First Cut crew, peace out. Peace.